Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through. So tell me why you mad even.
Hello, and welcome back to Anything is Potable. As you can probably tell, I am not Sam Jam Packard. I am Jay King, and I will be joined today by a fantastic host, Brian Robb, the legend himself from MassLive.com, one of my favorite writers, a good friend of mine. Packard is off doing God knows what for his birthday, which happened to be on the same day as the NBA trade deadline. So he didn't have time for us. He did not have time for us. Thankfully, we got my man Brian Robb. What's up, B-Rob?
It's an honor. I can't believe Jam left you high and dry for this.
Yeah, and he didn't even tell me. It was like, not only did he not tell me, but when he did tell me, I got a Twitter DM from him this afternoon saying, could you do it in an hour? Could you record the podcast in an hour? I have a dinner for my birthday tonight. I was like, man, why didn't you text me?
The DM.
I just got a Twitter DM. Well, I don't know what was going on with Jam, but I do know that the Celtics had a pretty dizzying day. I feel like Danny Ainge conditioned us to sort of expect not much at the trade deadline. He normally had totally quiet trade deadlines, and Brad Stevens came in, first trade deadline, went out and got Derek White, went out and got Daniel Tice again, went out and traded Josh Richardson, Dennis Schroeder, and this year's first-round pick. Not to mention the 2028 pick swap everyone's talking about. And he still has five roster spots to fill. So,
by the way,
that's probably the wildest part of all this. We'll start there, even though it's probably the least interesting part. It's just crazy. Like, what do you think comes next for this team?
Has it ever had, like, this has to be a record for most open roster spots after a trade deadline, like, or at least close to it. Like, usually you see.
I was talking to someone from another team, and I was like, "This couldn't have ever happened before." And he said that when Marc Gasol got traded to the Raptors, they had a bunch of open roster spots.
Okay,
but I don't remember exactly how many it was. Five is intense.
Five's a lot. I feel there was one year the Celtics. It was like the Troy Murphy year where they went all in on like buyout signings and none of them worked. I feel like it was like what 2013, like 2012, something like that.
And Mikey Moore,
like Carlos Arroyo, maybe there was one of those years, but this just five's a lot. And it sounds like they're going to kind of piecemeal it together here. I would think Sam Hauser is probably a candidate to get one of those like real roster spots if they want to convert his two-way.
They do need a shooting.
Right? That's a need. And then after that, 10 days in the meantime, do you think, Jay, that like would any veteran really want to come play? Because they're really like, there's open roster spots, but there's not a ton of opportunity to play on this team right now, at a lot of positions, at least with the guys they have left over.
The only thing that someone mentioned this to me, that the playoff bonus and the chance to potentially win a playoff round and get a bigger bonus could also come into play, because then you get a little bigger payday for joining a team that does that. But also, if you're doing that, you could join somebody else.
Right.
that might go deeper into the playoffs. So I don't know exactly how that will unfold. I do know Luke Kornet is on the Celtics G League team.
Yep.
They could probably use like a center with size. There are other guys that could be at buyouts. Like,
he's also a drive away. That probably helps Luke.
Yeah. Robin Lopez, like, is Derek Favors going to end up somewhere? Who else? Like,
Valentine's up in Maine. I wonder if he'll get a, like a 10-day or something like that. It's just, you know.
I love how we're starting with just discussion of G League. Let's bounce over to Derek White, who will actually be a major part of the Celtics rotation, and who the Celtics gave up Josh Richardson, who's having a pretty good season, and a first-round pick, and a 2028 pick swap that still has Danger Cart just...
Oh, he's human. I just talked to him about it. He is not happy.
I was dying laughing reading his tweets about the pick swap. And in his defense, like, it could be a major deal.
Oh, it could be a disaster.
It could end up a disaster. Like, let's say Jaylen Brown leaves and Jason Tatum leaves, and 6 years from now, the Celtics stink, and they have to give up a lottery pick to the San Antonio Spurs. Like, that would just be tough. I think, in all likelihood, like, it won't matter. But it certainly could. 6 years is a long, 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 long time in the NBA.
It is. And like, amazingly, like, Tatum will only be 30 at that point, which is kind of nuts in terms of what he's been in the league that long. And he's still be that young, that far away.
He'll
be
19, B-Rob.
I mean, that's true. I mean, my mistake. but you're right. It is. Like, think about, like, what teams have a guy, you know. That would mean if he was still here, he would have played, what, like 10, 11 straight years for the Celtics at that point? And how many guys do that anymore in today's NBA? It's pretty few and far between.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they'll want him to stay.
Yes.
He will certainly want him to stay. And if Derek White is a great fit, maybe it'll help him stay.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing to me, maybe not the most interesting thing to me, but one interesting thing to me is that after all this talk about can Marcus Smart be your point guard, the Celtics basically went out and got like a different version of Marcus Smart to probably back him up, and just said, you know what, we're not going to have any regular point guards, or maybe Peyton Pritchard will play. I do think he'll end up playing a little bit because of this deal. But basically, they're like, we are leaning into defense. We are going to have one of the best defenses in the league, maybe the very best defense in the league, and good luck trying to score against these dudes. Now, will the Celtics have enough scoring? I don't know. Probably not. but White is an extremely good defender. Watching his clips on Synergy, I was like, I knew he was a good defender. But watching him, he's like so solid, so tough. Can really guard just about anyone. So I'm really intrigued to see the defensive potential with this group. I assume like their bench will probably be most nights, like maybe playoff rotation, just White and Grant Williams. There's no weak link there.
No. And I think that's, you know, clearly what they were aiming for here with the premium they paid in the trade package. Like they probably were looking for exactly this type of guy that you're talking about defensively that wouldn't cause a drop-off there, but also potentially provide some more offensive upside, or at least be a better offensive fit as a ball mover in an Ime Udoka's system. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Jay. Like, you don't think about, you know, we see White twice a year, you know, when we're covering the Celtics, and, you know, he's a fun watch, but he doesn't stick out to you a ton defensively. But if you do look at the defensive metrics and some of the clips and just talking to people around the league, it's like, no, he's got good size. He can play both guard positions and he takes a ton of charges and just should be able to, you know, he's not Marcus Smart level defense, but he's not, you know, too far off that either from the sounds of it talking to people.
Yeah. And I think part of it too, so obviously like Richardson's had a pretty good season and I think he was a pretty good fit for the Celtics. And he worked hard at being a fit. Like, I didn't always love his game at other stops, but I thought, like, for the most part, he made good decisions. He took good shots. He shot the ball really well. But I think it's the vision, at least, is that Derek White will give them more versatility. Like, he's bigger and stronger than Josh Richardson. He'll be able to guard up, and he'll just give them, like, a ton of just rugged dudes. And I think that's part of the vision. And on the other side of the ball, I don't think the Celtics believed Richardson could really handle the point guard role. And I think they believe that Derek White can. And so he'll just give a little more versatility on both sides. It's funny, too. Like, they're hoping that he'll have a sort of Richardson-like revival as a shooter. He's shooting,
I would hope so.
Is it like 31-point-something% this season from three? Which is not great.
No. Not
and
not
especially
really
not great when that's been one of their weaknesses most of the season, is shooting. And so from that standpoint, like, they didn't get any better shooting wise. But White can really pass, and he's a good decision maker. And I think that was one reason why they wanted to have him come off the bench versus Richardson versus Schroeder, is like the level of maturity and decision making there is definitely an upgrade.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, how well it translates, we'll see. But I would think that, you know, the Celtics second unit offense, even when they've been winning lately, like, has gone through some pretty rough offensive stretches, and that's for a variety of reasons. But I think a big part of it was, you know, there wasn't the ball movement with those guys on the floor wasn't great. And so White, as I said, like, he's a really good passer. He can run the pick and roll well, something that, you know, Richardson can really do effectively. And if he's able to get good shots for other guys in that second unit, whether it's, you know, Pritchard, if he can play now, or Grant Williams, or, I mean, we'll see how much Tice gets to play here too once we get to him. But that's something that I think should help this offense a great deal, not just in the short term, but the long term, and maybe take some of the onus off of, you know, Tatum and Brown when they kind of anchor those second units.
And the other part too is, like, Schroeder in the closing unit was not a good fit.
No.
And I don't think Udoka ever really trusted Josh Richardson enough to really close with him. Like, he did it, he closed sometimes, but it was not something Udoka really wanted to go to.
Right.
And so I think White in the closing unit will be probably, I would assume, the norm for the Celtics moving forward, unless they use their starting lineup, which has killed everybody, but hasn't really been Udoka's favorite down the stretch of games. So I think that part could be a major upgrade too. If he can fit with that group, if he is a better fit next to Tatum and Brown and Smart than Schroeder was, then that's a big deal and could go a long way toward helping their major, major issues of crunch time execution.
Were you surprised by the price for White, or do you think that was pretty, like, in line with what a guy like that could fetch?
I think the pick swap part of it surprised me. Even though, like I said, it probably won't matter. It could end up mattering a lot. Like, that part surprised me. And I do wonder if Brad Stevens could have driven a harder bargain and forced the Spurs to just get rid of that part of the deal. But if you're getting a guy who's 27 and on a pretty reasonable contract and who you think can be part of your closing lineup, then a first seems about right. Like, and a first that, because the Celtics have played so well lately and because they'll probably end up a playoff team and because this should help them with all of that, like, it'll be, what, between 17th and 25th, that pick?
Right.
So yeah, it's not like you're giving up a ton. And the other part of this is we've already seen there's not much room to develop on the Celtics bench.
No.
And Grant Williams has emerged as a piece for now and the future. I think the Celtics are still high on Peyton Pritchard, and I think that's another part of this deal that isn't going to be like the headline part of the deal, but I think because Schroeder and Pritchard couldn't play together, that really limited Pritchard's opportunities. But now he can play with anybody else in the rotation because everybody else is a plus-size guard or big man and really versatile and really tough and really defensive-minded. And so it just opens a chance for Pritchard to play. So I think that's another part of it. Were you surprised by how much it?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, just looking at White's numbers this year, you know, he wasn't. It's fair to say. It's career high for assists, but you know, it's a down year for the Spurs. It's a down year, obviously, for him for shooting wise. But I mean, I guess it's just if the Celtics were looking for this type of player, and the Spurs are certainly not a team that's active at most trade deadlines, so. It may have been just a situation where you have the Celtics, if they wanted to play ball here, they're going to have to pay a premium to get White. And they obviously like White a lot and were willing to roll the dice on that. So, I mean, I guess it says, like I said, the first round pick shouldn't mean much. You know, Richardson, I think, had a little bit of value around the league, but clearly not a ton if this is what they wanted
to do. And I think they sold high on him.
Yeah, no question.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, he was playing about as well as you could have expected. And shooting at a level that he wasn't probably going to sustain.
No.
and so they sold high on him. But he was good for, like, he was good for them. And White will need to be really good to be worth what the Celtics gave up for him. I do think that's kind of doubling down on the vision they had last summer when they realized, okay, Kemba's not the guy for us anymore. We have to move on from him. What if we go to a jumbo starting lineup with Marcus Smart in it? How good could we be defensively with that? Can we be good enough offensively with that? And I think this feels like doubling down on that idea, and just saying, you know what? Having Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as two guys who are like among star duos, they're extremely talented defensively, which is different. Like that's what separates them from a lot of other star duos. A lot of the other guys around the league that are legitimate stars or borderline all-stars in Jaylen's case, but like at least one of them doesn't play D. Both the Celtics guys play D. And so you have a chance to build an awesome, awesome defense around them. And the Celtics was kind of decided, like, okay, let's do that. let's lean all the way into that. And if Tatum and Brown become good enough playmakers, it can work. And I don't think they're good enough yet, but I also think they're on the path. And the last few weeks have felt like the beginning of them starting to figure that out. And White, as another passer, as another good decision maker, as another guy who doesn't need the ball like Dennis did to make an impact, like that could help them along that path. And so I'm interested to see what it looks like. I don't think it puts them in the upper echelon of the East still. The East is dangerous.
What a day.
The East is, yeah, what a wild day in the East. I mean, James Harden is going to end up being great for the 76ers. Like, whatever was bothering him over the last few weeks that he looked like trash, he's going to show up and be really good for the 76ers. You know that. So they're a legitimate title contender, obviously, the way Embiid is playing. And then the Nets, like, Harden didn't want to play there and was playing like he didn't want to play there, so they had to move him. I think, like, talent-wise, they're not as good, but Simmons is really good. And him and Kevin Durant and half the time Kyrie will also be dangerous. So where do you think the Celtics are in the East now? Like, fifth or sixth still?
Yeah. Honestly, it's...
Probably,
if they're lucky, to be honest. I mean, Toronto's been playing really well, too. Like, and they... I mean, I know they didn't really do too much today, but... they're going to be right there. But yeah, like, you look at, you know, you mentioned Seth Curry moving too. I mean, that the shooting around Durant, even if Ben Simmons is a shell of himself for a few weeks here, like, they should be, if Durant comes back, they should be able to, you'd think past the Celtics in the regular season. And then I think the Celtics' best chance here to get up to, I think, like, matchups in the first round, obviously, is going to be, I mean, they're always important, but this year it could be like, oh, you could either be playing the Cavs or the Bucks in the first round, or like the Nets or something insane, like some juggernaut. So if they can get,
I feel like the Cavs are the team you want to play the most right now.
Right, it's the amount of posturing to play them in the last week of the regular season should be funny, if everything's all bunched up.
Which is too bad because they've been awesome.
Oh yeah, fun watch, like really fun team. The rest of it's great.
The rest of the East is just loaded. Like to me, Milwaukee, Philly, Brooklyn, and maybe Miami are like the real contenders. I don't even think I put Chicago in there, even though they've been awesome.
Right.
And then Boston, Atlanta. Like Atlanta's really good again. The Hornets can really score that thing. Like the East is, it's crazy how good the East has gotten, kind of surprisingly and out of nowhere. And then the Raptors have just beaten everyone lately.
It's a gauntlet. The East playoffs is going to be a gauntlet. Like, no matter, like...
Yeah, it really is.
There's probably going to be, like...
The Nets are in eighth place.
Right. There's probably going to be, like, a 45, 46 win team in the play-in games, like, which, you know, compared to past seasons is, you know, going to be far better in that slot. So, it should be a lot of fun. But, yeah, I mean, the Celtics, at least defensively, with this move and, you know, by shoring up their front court, we haven't really talked about Tice yet, but, you know, that's a... I think that's a, I mean, the contract, I think I'm kind of surprised they didn't get an asset with him, but from a defensive standpoint, I think just to provide some reliable depth behind Rob Williams and Al Horford in the event that, you know, so they, those guys don't have to be overtaxed with minutes and stuff like that should be a way to keep those guys healthy and in good shape for the long run, while also, you know, maintaining the defense Ime Udoka wants to play.
Yeah, I think that part was important because obviously Ennis Freedom was not a good fit for what the Celtics want to do defensively this season. He's not really a good fit for what any team wants to do defensively.
Does anyone sign him, Jay? Do you think anyone, like, does anyone want him at this point? Like, on a playoff team, I should say? Like, it's.
I doubt it, but also, like, Greg Monroe has been signing contracts lately, you know? So. I don't think Ennis will help anyone substantially, but I also think that I wouldn't be surprised if someone signs him. At the same time, he just wasn't a good fit, and Tice should be a clear upgrade from him, even though Tice didn't really do anything good in Houston for half a season.
He fell out of the rotation for, like, a 15-win team here. Like, that's not great.
Yeah, So, but it'll be a much better fit in Boston. They know he's a better fit in Boston. They've seen it before. They know he fits well with the Celtics' best players. And, like, and I think the Celtics have been fortunate so far with Robert Williams and Al Horford that those guys have been available as often as they have and to play the amount of minutes that they have. So I do think you're right. Like, they needed a better depth piece behind those guys. And Tice, as far as that goes, like, he'll be good. The contract thing is just bad to me. Like, that's not even – like, I just don't know why they looked around and maybe it was as simple as they wanted a better backup right now. And maybe he's even insurance for, like, if they move on from Horford after this season, they at least have somebody other than Robert Williams. But it's just a lot of money to pay the third best center on your team. And he has $18 million guaranteed over the next two seasons and a team option the year after that. And it was weird. And I think it's a sign that the market for Dennis Schroeder just wasn't there. Like, at the end of the day, they wanted to move away from him. And that was the option they decided was best. So I just don't think there were really deals for Dennis Schroeder.
No, certainly not. I mean, They weren't getting a lot. For sure, they weren't getting more than like a second round pick and probably a contract they didn't want back. In terms of what the market was out there, and so yeah, like with I agree with you 100% about the contract. It's a lot of money to be paying a guy that, you know, is, I guess, not even. I mean, he'll play a little bit right now, but to be honest, it might not be. If they get a good wing, like, you know, you might have nights where you're better off going with Al, Rob, and Grant Williams in a 3-man rotation among the bigs, kind of like they've been doing. But yeah, like Tyus as long term insurance at a not a good price, but at least you get it locked in and you know what you have there. Or maybe, you know, Brad Stevens obviously is a big Daniel Tyus fan and said, okay, I know he's not earning this money now, but we think it'll be better back here. So, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out. But I mean, it should be a fun story. The war on Tyus is back, and everyone will be pining for him at the Garden.
It's also kind of a punishment to the Celtics for signing Enes Freedom.
Yeah.
Because if they had landed on a backup center who worked and who made sense, they wouldn't have felt compelled to go out and acquire someone who's that expensive. And obviously, owing $18 million in this day and age over the next two seasons is not a huge contract, but it's just really easy to find cheap centers these days. And you can always get someone on a reasonable deal who can be a totally fine center, which Tyus is. Like, he's totally fine. He'll work. But centers on cheap deals, like, that's the easiest type of player to find, I feel like. And committing as many resources as the Celtics have now, they'll have Robert Williams making, what, $13 million next year, whatever it is. They'll have Al Horford, who, if they keep him, will be making close to $30 million. And they'll have Daniel Tyus, the third best center, making $9 million. And that's just a lot. And especially it's a lot because the owners haven't really shown the willingness to pay a big tax bill at all. And so I do wonder if the Celtics will eventually have to pay something to get off of Tyus's deal at some point, or get off of somebody else's deal because of this move. So that's the bad part of that deal to me. But Tyus should help this season.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, they're, to your point about next year, like, they already had a lot of money committed to a lot of guys. And I know Horford's contract's only half guaranteed, but, you know, that's still cutting a guy and having a $14 million dead cap hit on your roster is not good when you have no cap room regardless and are in luxury tax territory even before you let them go. So it's how they manage that, how much spending they're actually willing to do as you go into next season into the tax. That's going to tell a pretty big story about, you know, what ultimately happens with Tyus in Boston. But for now, it should be better.
Do you think that Brad Stevens would have gone this route if the Celtics hadn't won 8 of their last 9 games? Like, 3 weeks ago, do you think he was sitting there like, okay, let's add Derek White to this and keep the same starting lineup and see what we can do? Or was that a thing that was influenced by how well the Celtics played while beating up on nobodies over the last few weeks?
You know what? I bet the White thing he probably would have done either way. Maybe he was more enticed to, like, pay the higher price for White, you know, to get him in the door to, like, help in the present and, you know, start building with this group for the future, given that he's under a long-term deal. But it's, from talking about, like, it sounds like, you know, they wanted to, the team saw, you know, had probably identified some guys that they thought were undervalued around the league, and I assume White was one of those guys. And it was kind of clear that, you know, certainly Schroeder was not a long-term fit, and Richardson had played well, but wasn't exactly the type of guy they thought they needed offensively. And so, yeah, like, but maybe the Tyus thing too, I don't know if that gets done if they don't start winning all these games, because again, adding that payroll for the present and the future doesn't make a ton of sense, and given how much you love him. But I don't know, it is fascinating though, how much you wonder what this month changed for them. But I could have, honestly, I could have seen them making a move like this either way. I guess maybe they were going to pay a higher price for White based on what happened.
Yeah, and I also think it probably, in the last few weeks, probably emboldened them that Derek White was the right type of player.
Yeah.
Right? Because I do feel like the success of that starting lineup, even as much as it's been against patsies and teams that have just been missing everybody and, you know, just a bunch of blind people and grandmas and stuff. Like, that group has been awesome all season. Like, just rolling opponents, building 15-point leads in the first quarter pretty regularly. Like, it's kind of crazy how steadily they've gotten off to great starts lately. And so that kind of, I think, probably validated the vision that they had with, like, having just a huge physical lineup and not needing a ton of creation at the point guard position because Tatum and Brown are going to handle a lot of that anyway. And so White fits into that vision perfectly. Like, it's just kind of an extension of their starting lineup. They're going to be able to play the same way when they have what I really do think their playoff rotation will be seven guys, and they're going to be able to play the same way with tons of physicality and size, basically no matter who's on the court. And that feels like a big deal to them. They have an identity, you know? Like, I don't know when the last time, I guess when Gordon Hayward was around and Kemba was healthy, they had an identity. They were just, like, more versatile than you and, like, had a lot of size on the perimeter. But now it's like they're just tough. They are tough, and they're going to stop you, and they're going to hope that Tatum and Brown play well enough to carry the offense. And that's just kind of how it's going to have to be. And I don't know whether that could ever be enough, but I think they'll get to evaluate to some extent what that vision will look like over the rest of the season.
No question. Then see what happens, and then based on that, you figure out what the next step is in the offseason, whether you're taking a big swing for Beal or whoever, or you say, hey, we can, if we just keep building to this, then maybe we can give ourselves a shot.
Yeah, and I also think they have options in the future now. Like, Derek White and Marcus Smart are pretty similar players. And if the Celtics think, okay, this is a good plan to have both of them, and we can just be physical and we'll have enough offensively, then they can keep them both. But if not, they can move one of them, who will presumably still have value, because, you know, every team is looking for tough guards in their 20s who can really defend and also handle the ball and pass. But they could move one of them for more creation if they need to. And so I do think that, even though, like, White may feel like a little overlap right now, like, it could work, and it could be really good together, him and Marcus Smart. Like, they're just two pit bulls. But also, if it doesn't work, they'll have options to go out and get some more creation, and some more creation that's not Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah,
we haven't even talked about Romeo Langford.
I mean, that's kind of a sign of his Celtics career. Unfortunately, it's like he wasn't around too much. I don't want to be too mean, but it's. I hope he gets a chance in San Antonio. He had some moments, I think, sporadically when he was healthy early in the season, a couple points, in past seasons. But at this point, was he just nothing more than a bad contract given the $5.6 million option they picked up on him next year? Like, he certainly wouldn't get that money if he hit the open market after this season. So, I mean, I'm curious, how do you think he'll do in San Antonio?
He'll probably be fine defensively, like, totally solid defensively. He'll probably miss some time due to injuries, and he probably won't score too much. Like, I don't know.
We're behind a lot of guys there too, I feel like. They got a lot of wings.
Yeah, they got a weird team over there. Just a weird team. I don't know. I mean, I hadn't given up on Romeo Langford ever becoming something, but also the shooting wasn't really there. He never even really tried to produce much offensively, which would have been fine if they had like a ton of scoring elsewhere and he could be like a Bruce Brown type. But that's not the roster they had. Like, they kind of needed more. And so if they had to give up on one of the two former recent lottery picks, him or Nesmith, I think they gave up the right one and kept the right one, because I do think Nesmith's potential as a shooter outweighs whatever Romeo can be. But we'll see on that one. The jury is still out there. But yeah, that was not the best lottery pick.
No, it was a tough miss right there.
The Kings just happened to be good once ever, or competent once ever. That was the Kings pick, right, Romeo?
Yep.
And so any other Kings year, basically, that would have been like a top five pick. And instead, number 14, one spot behind Tyler Hero. Mm. Romeo.
What could have been?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Romeo. All right, let's go. I think we got some questions from the crowd here. Let me see if I can figure out how to use this audience. Jonathan R., you have joined the stage, my man. What you got for
fellas,
us?
Fellas, I just got to say, it's nice to have some thoughtful, nuanced takes on this podcast for once. but I miss Jim's.
Hey, go fuck yourself.
I do miss Jam's unfettered optimism, so I'll say I'm going to give it to you. Derek White, third most charges, I think, like per game or totals in the league right now. Nobody's getting up the court between him and Marcus Smart if they're on the court together. I think they're going to hold teams to like 75 a game. You don't need to score. That's what's going to happen. Also, you're missing the subtext of this Daniel Tice shit, okay? It's clear the Celtics cannot go a season without a German NBA player. And I think that needs to be discussed.
That is true.
Those are my hot takes. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Starting strong with the takes from Jonathan here.
A big theme recently of the callers has been just shitting on me and Packard. which I appreciate.
It's great listening. Come on.
I appreciate that. But yeah, I made the mistake of going on Twitter and saying it must have been the first German for German trade in NBA history, when really the Celtics traded Tice for a German last season, Mo Wagner.
Oh, crap.
How could I have forgotten about Mo Wagner's German heritage? Just a pathetic, pathetic miss by me there. So yeah. This is the second straight year the Celtics have traded a German for a German, has to be the first time in NBA history.
That has to be the longest streak in NBA history, just two seasons straight. I wonder what that text exchange is like between those two guys right now. Does Daniel get at the locker? Does he get his old locker back? I wonder where Schroeder's going. We haven't really talked about, not that it matters, but... You know, he's. I would assume he's gonna get bought out. I imagine shortly here, and then that'll be a fun little piece to watch land in either conference.
Did you think they had to move on from Schroeder? Because it seems like they were pretty ready to move on from him based on the move that they made and the money they acquired.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that the deal speaks for itself, I think, on that front in terms of they wanted to open up some opportunity for Pritchard and Nesmith, it seems like, with this deal. And those guys were not going to play over Schroeder if he was here. So if you're the front office and you want to see those guys, then you have to kind of take care of it for the coach. And that's what they did.
Yeah, I feel like the last few weeks, the Celtics were headed in one direction and Schroeder wasn't headed in that same direction. You know, like the whole team was taking giant strides and Schroeder was a minus 13 and a 35 point win the other night.
Yeah.
And stuff like that was happening pretty regularly, where when Schroeder got in, things just kind of didn't have the same feel to them. His numbers off the bench were just awful for the Celtics.
How did he win sixth
so
man?
So bad.
A couple years ago, and then forget how to come off the bench. It was the splits were jarring. It was nuts.
It makes you think that he just didn't want to make it work when he was coming off the bench.
Mm.
Like he shot 48% when he was a starter. And 36, I think, when he was off the bench. And, like, there was just such a difference between him off the bench and him as a starter that it was weird. It was weird. And I don't think him and Richardson were a great fit.
Too ball dominant.
Like, yeah. And then he never fit in the closing line. So I don't know if they had to move on from him, but I think they're better off certainly giving those minutes to White and probably giving those minutes to Pritchard, who will bring them shooting and who won't be ISO heavy and will provide spacing and all that and won't be a ball stopper. So, yeah, I don't know. The value he had by the end of his tenure was weird. Like, clearly, just not a lot of teams wanted him. I think we've got another. Oh, we've got June. June is the primetime caller. Another man who has come on the podcast and shitted on me. June, what you got for us?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, I just want to top on and say I really enjoyed the deadline from Brad. I thought he had, I think based on what I read and based on what he said, he had like multiple goals that he needed to accomplish that I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to pull off. And I think he did, right? Like for one goal was to get under the luxury tax and he did. I mean, I don't really give a shit about that because Wick has a lot of money, but whatever. And then two, like with how they've been playing, there was some need for a short term upgrade, right? To like, I guess, tell the Jays, like let the Jays know, like we're not going to just like punt on seasons because we built a shitty roster for you, right? Like, and I think they accomplished that by basically getting Derek White, who's, I mean, to me, clearly a better player than Josh Richardson or Dennis Schroeder. And there was a report saying they're also trying to open up minutes for, you know, Aaron Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard. They also did that because basically they traded away two perimeter players into one better one. So now.
And all of their bench.
Yeah. Players. And so now Aaron Nesmith or Peyton Pritchard is going to play. And Derek White is basically a big point guard and Peyton Pritchard is basically a tiny two guard, in my opinion. So like they could play together. Right. And I think the most important part Brad Stevens kept on saying was, yeah, but all the moves have to be aligned for like the next championship team, which basically sounded to me like we have to do everything to make sure that we could still get a third star. And I think the Schroeder-Tice trade to me, based on what his value was it seemed like it was geared towards that, because a lot of the names I heard were basically expiring contracts in a second, or like DiVincenzo's expiring this year. So like, even if they got Dante or like a Troy Brown or whoever, who's not a big and theoretically could play in the rotation more seamlessly than Theis, right, because they're expiring, like you can't get those deals involved in any kind of trade in the offseason. Where Theis, yeah, he's a little overpriced at nine a year, but like Dennis Schroeder, like if you re-signed him, the max the Celtics could have offered was like 7, I think, right? So I think in that sense, it's nice to have a contract in Daniel Theis that you could just include in a trade, right? Like it's not a free agent, so you know you could move that. And I think they're probably not going to pay Al Horford $27 million next year, right? So in the case that Al Horford is quote unquote the salary that needs to be included in a potential trade for a third star, maybe someone from St. Louis who has a player option that he could opt into and ask for an opt-in and trade and have a 15% trade bonus that basically makes him, that lets him not lose any money, right? Because he opts in. If they pull off that opt-in and trade with that 15% bonus, I think, and then he extends on top of that, his number would basically be the same as signing a 5-year max with Washington. So I think all of that considered, like, I think he accomplished all of that. So I was pretty hyped about that. I think the only downside is, yeah, there's 3 centers on the roster. So like, you do need Aaron Nesmith or Payne Pritchard or like some guy who comes in to fill one of the 5 roster spots to be a legitimate rotation player on the perimeter. But outside of that, and 2028 first round pick that people are sad about, the Celtics are going to be sad about, I don't really care about that. So, but I was pretty happy with the deadline.
June, you are a legend. You are better at this than I am. I don't want to put B-Rob into that because I won't put.
We gotta look out for our jobs here, Jay. With 5th June around, this is pretty.
June comes on the show every time and makes me feel bad. I'm like, damn, this dude just comes on the show and he's better than I am. And I do think there's confidence that at least Pritchard will be able to play minutes. Because he has, you know, whenever he's gotten a real chance, whether it was last season or this year when Schroeder was out, like he's looked good and he's shot the ball really well. And so I think there's confidence from the Celtics that he'll be ready for that. The other part that you brought up, June, that I think was important here is kind of the human aspect of this. And you said, you know, you want to show Tatum and Brown that you're not going to punt on a season. I also think it's important for those guys to feel that, you know, after a season and a half of really difficult circumstances, that finally things are going right and the Celtics are invested in making things going more right. You know, like they dealt with a lot of criticism over the past year and a half, and finally they're on a team that's cruising. Finally, you know, the overreactions from everybody are going, you know, in the Celtics' favor. You look on Twitter and it's like people going crazy about how well they're playing and this and that. And it's like everyone had been overreacting the other way for a long time. And so I think it's important for Tatum and Brown to feel some more of that. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how this all ends up going, and we'll see how White fits, and we'll see if he does make them any closer to succeeding in the playoffs, which is obviously the goal, but they're trying, and it is crazy they only have 10 guys on their roster right now. Like, that's fucking insane. That's truly insane.
What's your
Bruno Fernando will be missed. I've got to tell a Bruno Fernando story, because this is the last time really to tell a Bruno Fernando story.
Let's hear it.
When we were in Orlando, they sit you courtside, and so we were right near the Celtics bench, and Mo Bamba caught the ball, and I think it must have been Schroeder guarding him in the post, and Fernando was just calling out, "He's soft! He's soft!" about Mo Bamba. And then Bamba, I forget whether Bamba missed a shot or whatever happened. Bruno called out, I think he said, "Told you he's soft." And then Bamba drew a couple free throws a few plays later, and Bruno shouted out, "He's still soft." And so Bruno was electric on the sidelines. He was just chirping at guys. So I enjoyed that about Bruno Fernando. I will miss that part of the Bruno Fernando experience.
And what a way to go out with that dunk against Brooklyn, too. The nice garbage time dunk.
And Freedom went out with a three ball from the corner.
That's right.
That was his last shot for the Celtics.
It was like George Costanza just walking off on the high note. That's it. Leave the room.
That's it. That's wild. We've got a couple more callers, and then we'll let you get off, B-Rub. I know it's really late. Ben D., you are on stage, my man. What you got for us? You've been waiting for a little while.
Hey.
How are you?
The first thing I want to say is that I'm also glad to get a bit of a break from Jam after he totally just shat on my lack of an idea for a John Collins trade. But, you know, the other thing I want to say is that I love the Danny Theis trade because I love Danny Theis. I know he makes way too much money, but like, I kid you not, like, I heard about the Danny Theis trade and I called my dad. I'm like, "You're not gonna believe what just happened." And everybody was just cheering. Like, everybody, I feel like everybody just loves that guy. So I'm excited to have him.
My mom was really excited too. My mom called me this afternoon and asked me if the Celtics got rid of anybody she loves. And I told her, no, they didn't. But I said, they did get Daniel Theis, though, and she was fired up. She's a big Daniel Theis fan. So
yeah, something about getting rid of Dennis and picking up Theis, like, in the same trade was just, like, poetic justice. I just loved it. That's all I had to say. But, yeah.
appreciate that call. And it's kind of sad that Packard wasn't here on the day that Dennis got traded. It was a big
I'm
day
surprised he's not calling in or anything right now. Like, he's it's his birthday. It's a birthday dinner.
He's celebrating the Dennis trade.
Right? I mean, he must be going nuts.
Somewhere out there, he's really celebrating the Dennis trade. Okay, we got one last caller. I don't know how to – Rowdy?
Yep, Rowdy.
How are you, man?
Good. How's it going? So not I just bad. Wanted to say, yeah, Derek White, I really like the acquisition there. I think they did give up, like, the picks, and that hurts a little bit. But then we had, you know, you had Josh Richardson, who's not going to be much for the Spurs, who are, like, rebuilding, and Langford, who they have to make a decision in, like, a year or so. So I did think we had to give him something. But he's a really good cutter. Seems like he's a good passer. He might not be a good shooter, but one thing I hate about Dennis was he just did, like, the pace went down as soon as Smart left the floor and Dennis came in. Hopefully that stays up, and then we'll see what happens. I think they're going to need a backup three or two. So I think what Brad was thinking was Pritchard was better last year off the ball. So hopefully White and Smart run the point, and Pritchard's more like a spot-up shooter. Or,
hey, Pritchard played great when Jeff Teague was next to him.
Exactly. I'm kidding. We had Kemba and Smart and whatever, but he was more of a knockdown shooter. I don't know if he's as comfortable just running the whole offense, you know what I mean? So
agreed, for sure.
But at the three, when one of the Jays comes out, it's going to be a little tough. I don't know if we can – maybe that's where he's trying to push Ime to play Neesmith or Hauser or whoever we can sign off the streets. I don't know. But, yeah, I do think it's a good – Brad, you could tell he was upset last year when they gave away Theis and Javonte Green for nothing. He kind of gave away – like, improved the rotation guys and then just gave away the end of rotation. Like, and just try to keep a competitive team and avoid the tax at the same time. So I really like the moves.
Yeah, I think the Celtics got better. We'll see how much better they got, and we'll see if the Tice trade and everything else was worth it. But I definitely think they got better, and I definitely think that White should be a good fit. So we'll see. We'll see. One last call. Kyle, what you got for us?
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
How are you, Kyle?
Doing good. Not a huge fan of the picks being moved, but I like the White acquisition. If they think that he's the guy, I'm all right. I'll trust the process. My biggest thing is that does trading for Tice open up the opportunity, and I'm petrified for it, open up the opportunity to more double big lineups with Tice at the four, because those never worked 2 years ago, and I'm petrified that those are going to be a new thing again.
I don't think that'll happen again. B-Rob, do you?
No. I think Grant Williams hopefully will protect against that. But you never know. Ime likes the double bigs a little bit, at least to start the game. So
Ime sometimes put like Freedom and Robert Williams out there together. There were a couple of times that happened. But that was normally when everyone had COVID. So yeah, I don't think that'll happen. But if it does, like Robert Williams' ability to guard fours at least makes it a little more palatable defensively. Offensively, I just don't think it works out. So I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they want to do that. Maybe sometimes if they have a shorthanded roster or whatever, they'll use it for a little while, but I think the double bigs is pretty strictly Horford and Robert Williams.
I would hope so at this point. I think Tice is more, to your point, like, I think Tice is insurance and a way to keep the minutes off Horford and Rob, which I think during this hot run, they've been playing a lot, which is great, but I think sustaining that for a full season would be probably asking a lot of both, and so now you at least have a little reliable backup plan as opposed to, Ennis Freedom on that front.
Yeah, and I think once you get to the playoff, like let's say you play Joel Embiid, it's going to be tough for Horford to play a ton of minutes in that matchup.
Right.
Like, just going to be physically taxing, and you're going to need a backup who can stay on the court. And I don't know if Tice is the guy to go.
Tyson. But at least till the rest of your defense, like it's Tice against the Sixers backup will work better on that front, at least when in those minutes that Embiid isn't playing.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. You got to give Brad a grade for his trade deadline today. What are you giving him?
I'm going B. I think I like him doing stuff to help now and to have guys that are here for the future. The price point for both of the major trades could be considered questionable. I mean, time is going to really tell the tale on that front. But I like both the players he brought back in. So all things considered, I'll go with a solid B there. What do you got?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like Derek White's not an A.
No.
Like Derek White doesn't thrust them into being a title favorite. He doesn't totally change their trajectory. But he allows them to build on what they've done well lately and see how well that formula can work when you can tap into more of it. And they kept their future first round picks, which I think is important too. And were able to find an upgrade for the bench. And now they just got to go sign few guys. All right. Thanks so much, B-Rob. I appreciate you coming on. I know it's late as hell. I know you've had a long day. How many stories did you write today?
I think we had about like 7. So dude, I'm just trying. I mean, you set the standard for us at Mass Life, Jay. So we've been trying to follow in your footsteps there on the
yeah, sorry, bro.
Yeah, so thanks a lot. No, sorry. I was like, sorry, you gotta work as hard as Jay here, too
much when I was a young buck.
No, but this is a lot of fun, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, everyone should go listen to, it's still called the Winning Plays Podcast, right?
Yep, Winning Plays Pod. If you want to hear what Danger Card had to think about the trade, I was going to make Jay come on, but you know he doesn't listen to other podcasts, so it'll make him do both on one night. So, but check it out for sure after you listen to this.
For sure, for sure. All right, thanks a lot, B Rob. That's it for this episode of Anything Is Potable. I appreciate all you listener guys as well. Packard will be back next time, so I don't have to do this beginning and ending shit.